On the surface, Joy Desombre's husband Joseph was everything she ever wanted.
He was intellectual, he loved to travel, he was so exciting, and he kind of had it all.
They were completely in love. It looked like the perfect relationship.
But Joy soon discovered something lurking beneath that perfect exterior.
I've never seen anything as violent, as horrendous as this.
They were beaten to death. Their throats were slit.
And before long, the only way for Joy to protect herself and her family was to help put the man she loved behind bars.
I was just shaking. I thought, this can't be real. This can't really be happening.
When it comes to love and marriage, things aren't always as they seem. Joy Desombre wasn't the type of woman who needed a man in her life. The 28-year-old single mom and college student had been down that road before.
I wasn't really interested in dating. When I'd finally gotten out of my first marriage, I was just sort of relieved and happy and very independent, and I had my two toddlers. I was moving forward in my life.
Men weren't on Joy's radar until a friend persuaded her to try her hand at online dating.
I met several different men. I just kept being disappointed. Nothing was really special to me about any of these men.
That is, until January 2002, when Joy began chatting with Joseph Kua, who said he was a 48-year-old commercial real estate broker with a degree from a prominent university.
Joseph was so far above and beyond all the other guys, everything you could ever dream of. Romantic, spontaneous, fun, exciting, intellectual.
The only downside was that Joseph lived in Northern California, about 8 hours from Joy's San Diego home. But he was willing to travel for love. A month later, Joseph came to town and took Joy out on a proper date.
We went to dinner and we stayed there long after other people had already left. We were just having an amazing conversation.
Joseph just seemed to do everything right and say everything right. He asked her a lot of questions about herself, and they seemed immediately taken with each other.
Before long, the two began to date, and Joy noticed how great Joseph was with her children, quickly becoming the father figure that never had.
He would do anything they wanted. He was teaching them sports. He was just the all-American dad.
And Joseph seemed to have a disposable income, which he showered on Joy and her children. But exactly how Joseph made his money was a bit of a mystery.
I was never quite sure what Joseph did for a living. When you asked him about his job, he would simply say, "I'm in commercial real estate."
He said specifically, "I like to separate my business from my personal life. I make a lot of money, I'm very successful, but it is stressful what I do." And I thought, well, everything else about him is so wonderful. Why am I going to be so picky about this?
So Joy put her concerns aside, and by the fall of 2002, she and Joseph started talking marriage. They planned an intimate ceremony for the following June in Kauai, Hawaii.
He had grown up in Hawaii, and he told me all about it, so we were very excited about that.
Joseph's only wedding guests were going to be his longtime friend and business partner, 75-year-old Fernand Wagner, and his 64-year-old wife, Suzanne.
Joseph said that he had met Fernand, I think, about a couple of decades before, and that Fernand had been a really successful restaurateur, and they had partnered up to be in commercial real estate together.
Joseph told Joy he was even the trustee on their will.
They didn't have any children. And Joseph was there for them. He helped them do a lot of things. He was their boy, in a way.
But in February 2003, 4 months before the Wagners were to join Joy and Joseph on their wedding day, Joy received some surprising news.
I got pregnant. So by June, I was about 5 months along, and I couldn't fit into the wedding dress.
The wedding was postponed, but their lives together moved forward with the purchase of a beautiful 4-bedroom home in Southern California. Joy was excited until Joseph told her something odd.
He let me know that his name was going to be the only one on the title because he had a lot more money than I did. I argued with him about that, but he promised me that once we got married, that he'd add my name to the title to the house.
So Joy decided to let the argument go. She felt lucky to have a man like Joseph. But 3 years later, her luck would run out. On June 14th, 2006, around 7 p.m., Joseph called Joy from Northern California. He was on his way home and had devastating news.
Hello. Joseph received a phone call from Fernand's nephew that Fernand had been murdered. And I asked about Suzanne, and he said, oh, she's dead too. I was so shocked. I said, oh my God, I can't believe this could have happened. And he acted like it was no big deal.
Joy assumed that Joseph was in shock, but when he arrived home later that evening, he seemed eerily calm.
Got on the computer, emailed some of the friends and family members of the Wagners. So sorry to hear that this has happened. And then he went to the gym.
The next morning, Joy slowly rolled over in bed and noticed something even more strange.
His hand was very badly swollen and purple, and you could see the blood right under the skin. Something seemed and felt desperately wrong.
In October 2003, 3 years before Joy DeSombre learned that her husband's business partners had been murdered, she and Joseph were celebrating the birth of a beautiful baby girl.
We agreed that we would name her Kauai, since that was the island where we were supposed to get married, so that was really special to us.
With a new baby, a destination wedding no longer seemed feasible. But 2 months later, Joseph had a surprise for Joy.
Joseph said, why don't we get married now? We'll go to Vegas. He said, I'll just fly your parents out, and now we can make it official.
Joy was thrilled, and a week before Christmas, she and Joseph read their vows in a small chapel in Las Vegas.
He talked about how he had found his soulmate. It was the most beautiful thing I had ever heard.
Over the next year, the couple thrived as Joy took a job as an auto adjuster, and Joseph worked hard to provide for his new family.
He always seemed to have money for anything we wanted to do. We took nice vacations, we had a couple of boats. We definitely were living, I thought, the nice life.
But Joseph was still working 8 hours away in Northern California, and the distance between the newlyweds was beginning to wear on Joy.
Every time we planned a vacation, he would end up shortening it at the last minute because he'd have to race back up north for business. He never had a set schedule.
Joy began to worry that there might be other reasons why Joseph was away so much.
He would say, I couldn't call him sometimes in the morning because he claimed he was out golfing with friends. I thought for sure that he was probably with someone else.
It didn't seem that he'd have any inclination to cheat because he seemed completely devoted to Joy and to the children.
Everybody reminded me, well, he does all these amazing things for you. I couldn't help but think, wow, maybe I am just being too nitpicky.
But in January 2005, just over a year into their marriage, Joy received a phone call that confirmed her deepest fear.
A woman from Northern California called me. She said that she had been seeing Joseph for the last 2 years.
She told Joy he had actually signed a domestic partnership with this woman, which in California is the same as a marriage.
According to the other woman, Joseph had described Joy as a crazy, strung-out addict with whom he'd had a one-night stand and a baby.
I responded that I was gainfully employed, that I didn't do drugs, that these things weren't true. I was just really blown away.
Joy immediately called Joseph and confronted him, but it was like talking to a stranger.
He said that it was my fault that he found her in the first place. She didn't have these small children running around like at our home. And it was more peaceful for him to go there. I couldn't believe that he let it go like that.
I felt so bad for her. My heart just ached. She was hysterical, she was sad, she was angry.
Joy wanted out of the marriage, but Joseph threatened that if she left, he would fight her for custody of Kauai and Wynn. And there was something very unsettling about the tone of his voice.
I could almost feel it in my body, this horrible, hollowed out darkness. It was almost like the feeling of evil.
In the winter of 2005, after discovering Joseph's infidelity, Joy DeSombre wanted out of her marriage, but knew she was trapped.
He would remind me that if I left, I would have nothing. He would say, "You'll be a bad mother, I can prove it in court. I can get full custody of Kauai. You'll probably lose your other two children." He was always threatening.
So Joy came up with a plan to prepare herself for an inevitable divorce and did what she could to squirrel money away to her mother.
I could probably only send her $50, $100, maybe $150. Frankly, it probably would have taken a decade to get enough money together for a good divorce attorney.
In the meantime, Joy resolved to keep the peace in the marriage.
I knew that I had to wait and just be patient to be able to build up enough money to have a decent divorce and provide a good life for my children.
Then that June, Joseph contacted Joy's father about visiting their home in Des Moines, Iowa with Kauai.
I think that my parents had planned on continuing a relationship with him, even if we did get divorced, because, you know, he is Kauai's father and he did do a lot of things with her.
But at the last minute, Joseph canceled the trip.
He said the reason was business. There was a bounce check in the Bay Area. And how do you take care of a bounce check? That's something that's taken care of by your bank.
A few days later, on June 14th, 2006, Joseph called Joy with some horrible news. He said Fernand and Suzanne Wagner had been shot to death in their home.
I just had tears rolling down my cheeks. I didn't know how to accept this. I was so in shock, I just didn't even know how to take it.
We didn't know what had happened. My first concern is that they were all in danger, possibly. It could be a situation where Joseph and Ferdinand had made somebody angry. They got Ferdinand and they're gonna be after Joseph next, or his family.
Joy fully expected Joseph to remain up north to handle things for his dear friends. Instead, he told her he was planning to swing by one of his boats and would be back in San Diego later in the evening.
And he said, "I'll get up there later on after the will is read. They're not going to do anything yet." And so it was about the will. It wasn't about them.
Meanwhile, investigators in Millbrae, California, were busy trying to solve the Wagner's murders.
I've never seen anything as violent and as horrendous as this. I see two lifeless people laying there, people who were, you know, coming into their golden years of their life. It shook me to the core.
At first, it appeared that the Wagners were victims of a robbery and sexual assault.
There are drawers open all around us. In the area where the bodies were located was Mrs. Wagner's underwear balled up on the couch nearby.
But something didn't add up. As investigators dug a little deeper, they uncovered evidence that suggested the killer might be someone the Wagners knew.
There didn't appear to be any kind of forced entry. So immediately we're thinking, maybe the person that had done this knew the family.
Meanwhile, when Joseph arrived home later that night, it was business as usual.
He showed up at the house a couple hours later with fast food in his hand, sat down, ate his fast food, got on the computer, and then he went to the gym. He came home after the gym and went to bed and slept like a baby.
On June 15th, the following morning, Joy rolled over in bed and noticed something odd. Joseph was covered with bruises and cuts. But when Joy questioned Joseph, he had an explanation for everything.
He told me that the bruise on his shin he got while he was rollerblading, and that the horrible bruising on his hand was from a refrigerator falling on it. And I couldn't help but think there's something wrong with these stories.
The following day, Joy headed out to meet Joseph on one of their boats with the kids, when her mom called with some shocking news.
I said they just released the cause of death. The Wagners were not shot in the head.
She held the phone out and played a live stream on their computer from a newscast, and it said that they'd been beaten to death. And that's when I knew. And I said, I know he did it. He's covered in bruises. He's the murderer.
The world stopped. For just a minute, you can't catch your breath. What on earth are we going to do now? She's on her way to meet a man that she knows murdered somebody.
I was terrified. I was crying. I was pounding on the desk. I was so frightened that something would happen to her.
Joy knew she couldn't risk letting on that she suspected Joseph was a killer.
I knew the best thing to do was to go right into the eye of the storm and put on the best acting job of my life. I was going to sleep on a boat with my three children next to a brutal murderer.
Into her marriage, Joy DeSombre was suddenly terrified that her husband would discover that she knew he was a killer. So she met him on the boat as planned.
And we drove on to the marina. We acted like everything was normal.
Meanwhile, Joy's mother called the tip line, but all she got was resistance.
The individual who answered the phone simply said, "This is out of my jurisdiction."
For the next 24 hours, Joy stayed with Joseph and kept up her act, hoping he wouldn't turn his rage on her and the kids.
And I continued to be the supportive wife for him, and I was terrified. We didn't know if they'd be safe. We didn't know what would happen during the night.
Later that day, on June 17th, Joseph told Joy he was heading back upstate. Joy headed straight to the police.
I called the detectives, and they had been looking for him all week. That's when I found out that they knew very early on that he was a person of interest.
Police put out an APB on Joseph's truck, and it wasn't long before he was spotted at another marina in Southern California. Police immediately took him into custody.
I felt so much relief, that he'd been caught, and our daughter and our grandchildren weren't going to be in danger.
Police charged Joseph with two counts of first-degree murder with special circumstances for multiple murder. And the more investigators dug up about Joseph's life, the less Joy realized she knew about her own husband.
I found out that he was not business partners with Fernand, that he was merely a maintenance man for them. And they were paying him $525 a month for a few hours of work to collect rent checks and do some minor maintenance. He had been skimming from rent checks and keeping the money for himself, moving money from accounts, kiting checks. I was so shocked. I was devastated.
Investigators believe that by the spring of 2006, Joseph had embezzled more than $200,000 from the Wagners, and Fernand finally figured it out.
Fernand Wagner confronted Joseph Kua in his house. I think he told Joseph that he knew he was stealing money from him and he wasn't going to put up with it anymore. And something snapped in Joseph Kua's mind.
And Joseph was particularly enraged. Fernand's throat was cut. Suzanne had been strangled. Both the Wagners were brutally beaten.
He couldn't have boats and houses and cars and travel without the Wagners' money. His life, as he knew it, was over. And I think he just lost it.
Joseph himself had racked up tens of thousands of dollars in credit card debt and made faulty claims on his income taxes, leaving Joy to pick up the pieces.
The vehicles were repossessed. The house was foreclosed upon. This was emotionally and financially devastating.
On June 2nd, 2008, Joseph went to trial and pleaded not guilty.
Joseph has never admitted guilt. He claims that he's innocent and that a third party murdered the Wagners.
On June 27th, 2008, Joseph Kuo was convicted on two counts of first-degree murder.
I was so excited and so relieved.
My children and I could be free of this person, and we didn't have to be afraid anymore.
On December 18th, 2008, Joy and Joseph's five-year wedding anniversary, Joseph was sentenced to two consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole. Their divorce was finalized in March 2009.
I think Joy is probably stronger than she was. She's paid a heavy price for this strength, but I think she's going to be okay.
Today, Joy and her children live with her parents and are slowly picking up the pieces.
My kids are just amazingly strong, and they're always there for me. And I hope that I've been a good example to them in how to turn this around in a positive way.
Joy is happy. She's hopeful. She's well-adjusted. She has taken a whole new direction in her life.
I'm moving on and using this as a lesson so that I can help educate others and so that I can do something really positive with what has happened in our lives. I'm not interested in dating again or getting married or anything like that or becoming serious with anybody. I think my children are significant enough, and that's, I think, how I'll live the rest of my life.
Absolutely.